of the Family Gamers Podcast.
This is episode number 94.
94.
94. We are crawling and scratching our way to 100, but we're not there yet.
Not yet.
You know what happened in 1994?
Lots of things, but I'm sure you're going to tell me something.
I entered high school in 1994. Why I remember that particularly, I don't actually know, but I entered high school in 1994.
All right.
That's about all I
got. Feel old yet?
Oh, I've felt old for a long time.
All right.
All right. Well, hello and welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. I am your host, Andrew, and as always, I am joined by my lovely wife, Anitra.
That's me.
We're here to talk about gaming as a family, the kinds of things that we like to do, the games that we like to play, and maybe some encouragement for some stuff for you to play in your household.
Let's get right to it.
Okay. So we've played not as much as I would have liked. Yesterday or whatever was International Tabletop Day. And unfortunately, we now have kids that are into sports and all this other stuff.
We were super busy all day long.
Yeah. So we weren't even like actually together until like 4:30 in the afternoon. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But we did get some gaming in.
We did.
And that's what's important.
We got in one whole game.
Right.
Which is better than none.
Right. So why don't we do this? Why don't we start from the most recent games we've played and then we'll move our way backwards over the last 2 weeks.
All right. So the one game we got in on Tabletop Day was POW from Gigamic.
Yeah, this is, we first played this game, we picked this up at PAX Unplugged.
Yep.
We first played this game at Disney World with the kids. And we kind of played it on the floor in the hotel room. And I wasn't really feeling it, I guess. I didn't really understand the strategy of the game. It was kind of weird, I guess.
And we were tired, and it was the end of a long day, and we wanted something to decompress. And if you already knew the game, I think it would be good for that, but trying to learn it was not, it just didn't feel right.
Right. So basically, the concept behind POW is that you are a comic book writer, and you are not really drafting comic book heroes or comic book villains, but you're rolling some dice, and you're trying, There's a lot of luck involved. It's a lot of die rolling.
There's a lot of luck, but
there is a little bit of strategy, right? So there, what you do is you take all of the villains and you line them up, and you take all of the heroes and you line them up, and you're rolling these dice, and whether they come up with basically hero icons or villain icons determines which hero or villain along the line that you have to take. So if you have three villain icons, you could take the third hero, the third villain. But if you have two hero icons, you could take the second hero. So you kind of have a choice between the second hero and the third villain. Or there's these other icons that allow you to steal heroes or villains from other people.
From other players, yeah.
The thing that makes it kind of tricky is that as you're taking these, they're tiles. They're not cards that you lay out. As you take these tiles, you stack them up. And so the order that you stack them up becomes important because depending on how many of these steal another player's hero or villain icon you get, it's either take one off the top or name a number in the stack, which means you have to remember, and take that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the game, you cannot have more heroes than villains. So you have to basically lop off any extra heroes that you have to make sure the stacks match.
But not any extra villains.
And so all the villains have negative point values on them. All the heroes have positive point values on them. I think the villains go up to -4 and the heroes go up to +6.
Something like that.
And then at the very end, once you've, equalized if necessary, you add up your villains and your superheroes.
And then everybody compares.
Whatever your score is, wins. So you're trying to get basically, you're trying to get a number of villains, but you want the lowest powered villains and you want the highest powered heroes.
Yes. But the highest powered heroes are in high demand. So just because you manage to finesse your die rolls and pull them out of the display line doesn't mean you're necessarily going to get to hang on to them.
Right. So there's a little bit of strategy to it, but this is a game that definitely relies a fair bit on luck.
Yeah.
And the plus side to that is with luck games, you can, first of all, house rule them.
Yep.
Which is what our topic is this week. But also, it levels the playing field a little bit when you're playing with different age ranges. So
yeah, if a game is heavily dependent on luck, then it doesn't really matter so much if you're an experienced player or if you are really good at reading the odds. Anybody can play.
Right. Well, I mean, we should say the more luck is the primary mechanic of the game. That's true. Right.
Sure.
But yeah, so it's a cute little game.
Yeah,
fun playing it. Yep.
Leading up to Tabletop Day, we had a game night. That was good.
Mm-hmm.
Pulled out Seikatsu to start because we were getting a slow start.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a friend of mine said,
"Seikatsu's a fun, relaxing, chill game."
And the friend who had showed up early kind of looked and was like, "Hey, you've talked about this, but I've never played it." And I said, "That's great. Let's introduce you okay, to Seikatsu." Cool. So that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way as the game is ending, every player is looking at the board from a different angle,
right?
Which is still awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We finally pulled out and played Imhotep.
We did. That is a fun game.
Which, yeah,
I liked it.
I told you a year ago that I loved it and wanted to buy it, and eventually we acquired it, and this was our first chance to sit down and play it.
Like 6-8 months later, or something like that. Yeah.
So you're all builders in ancient Egypt. And you are quarrying stones and then transporting them on boats to various locations. And the location that you end up at, each one has you do a different thing with the stones, and then points are awarded in different ways. I love the fact that on your turn, you can either quarry or put a stone on a boat or move a boat.
Mm.
So sometimes there's definitely tends to be a lot of spite boat moving.
Spite boat moving, right.
Get people out of your way so that you can get to the place you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've talked on the show before about how much I love the game Zulkin.
Mm-hmm.
Zulkin the Mayan Calendar. That is a very thinky worker placement game, yes. Like very thinky. And playing Imhotep reminded me a lot of Zulkin, but without a lot of the overbearing complexity.
Yes, it's a lot less thinky.
Yeah, but it definitely has a lot of those
There's still a lot going on. Yeah.
Things where there's four or five different ways that you can get victory points, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't call it worker placement, but I mean, I guess it's a resource management game.
Yeah, I mean,
not really, not in the classic sense.
It's kind of worker placement, except the idea is that once you've placed your worker, you're never going to get to move them again.
Yeah, it's. I don't know how you would kind of define that, but
you're building with blocks.
Yes,
that's
it's a building.
That's game. How the game goes.
But yeah, it is. It's fun, and it I like the juggling of a lot of different end states.
Yeah.
And that's a very Zulkin-like thing.
Yeah.
So it does not surprise me that you liked Zulkin and you like Imhotep, but you like Imhotep better because it hurts less.
There's a lot less analysis paralysis in Imhotep.
Yeah, so that was a fun game from Cosmos Games.
Yeah. That same night we also played Dimension.
Another game from Cosmos.
Also from Cosmos.
Yep.
Which I still love. I'm not a huge fan of the point structure for the way the game works.
That's probably because it's dumb.
So as a good example of house ruling, most of the time if I play Dimension, it's just, hey, let's sit down and do these little, randomly determined 5-minute puzzles. Or not 5-minute, 2-minute puzzles?
Are they that long?
I don't know. I don't know how long the sand time is.
I don't really mind the points part of it. It's the
there's all this bonus token stuff. And
yeah, some of the bonus
yeah
things are strange.
Yeah. I would rather not do the whole, like, we need to do a certain number of rounds, and then if you do this happens, just
burn through the deck and then you're done.
Treat them as little individual puzzles and like, oh, hey, I won this one. Oh, hey, you won this
right.
one. And just go for it like that.
Yep. 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 I mean, it's a nice logic puzzle is what it is. So.
Yeah, well, and unlike a lot of the other logic puzzle games that I've played, Dimension really is randomly determined every time, which gives it a little bit more replay value in my mind,
sure.
Anyway.
Sure. I would agree with that.
Sure. We have a copy of a game called Who Did It? From Blue Orange.
This game, our kids love this game.
Our kids, anybody's kids.
Yes.
The kids I babysit have also been playing this game when they come over, and they think it is hilarious.
And when we tell you what this game is about,
you will understand.
You will understand, and your kids will think it's hilarious, too.
So the case for the Who Did It game looks like the poop emoji.
Right.
The idea behind the game is that everyone has a bunch of pets, and someone's pet pooped where they shouldn't have.
So this game basically reminds me of, remember the so-and-so got their hand caught in the cookie jar. Who, me? Yes, you. Couldn't be, then who? That whole thing?
Yep.
That's this
game.
Definitely. That's this game.
That's this game as a card game.
Yep.
Yep. So it's, you know, well, my cat didn't poop in the living room. I think it was somebody else's fish. How a fish does that, I don't know. But whatever. Right. and then whoever can get a fish out of their hand and onto the deck first gets to be the next person to say, no, it wasn't my fish. It was someone else's hamster.
Right.
And then everybody races to find a hamster in their hand. The idea here is to either be able to get rid of all your cards or to get someone else to name off an animal that nobody else has anymore.
Right.
That everybody else has already gotten rid of. Either if you're stuck with the last card or if you mess up and name a card that's already been exhausted, you lose that round, you get a little poop token.
Right. I think it's the first player to get three loses or something.
Yeah. This is not a game that you actually play for a winner. This is a game you play until someone loses and then everybody else kind of points and laughs.
Right. Right. Yeah, let's dissuade the pointing and the laughing.
Fair. I'm just telling it like I've seen it.
Right.
But it's so much fun and it's fast moving.
Yeah. I want to say obviously every player has the same number of the same.
I believe it's six.
And it's six or eight animals that each one gets. So there's enough there that you're not going to keep it straight, right?
Right. You could, but it would take a lot of brain power.
Yeah, this game doesn't deserve that much brain power.
Agreed.
But it's a fun little game. This is a game that I think that probably once we get our multi-camera setup figured out, we'll Facebook Live this one.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we need to figure that stuff out.
As an aside, this is not a game if you tend to have sore losers. For the most part, the kids we've played with have been fine, but if there's one who's just having trouble getting up to speed, it can get frustrating. So, as is often the case with these silly kind of games, it's not always fun, but for the most part, we like.
Yeah, I mean, we've had different kids at different times kind of struggle with the disappointment of getting the poop token. It's not so horrible, I don't think.
No, it's not too bad. It's one of those, you know what? Let's keep playing. You can be the first player next time and then, you know, just move on.
Right. So that was Who Did It?
Who
Blue
Did It?
Orange Games.
We played a much more grown-up version of the speed game. But still ridiculous, called Space Team. You want to talk about Space Team?
Space Team is so awesome. So the game Space Team is a frenetic cooperative version of Pit, basically. Where
more or less, yeah.
Yeah, so what happened is everybody has there's a method to distribution of these cards, right? And everybody has a pile of cards in front of them that are, like,
it's a deck of
broken
problems,
and everybody has a hand of tools. And so you have a 5-minute timer. You flip the 5-minute timer over, and then you flip over the first problem. And each problem has certain tools that you need in order to fix it.
Right. It might specify the name of the tool. It might just give you the picture of the tool. It might give you a type of tool.
Right. Right. So there's, you know, multiple of a certain type of tool. So you just need one of them or something like that.
Yeah.
And so what you need to do is you're basically yelling out to all of your, you know, all of your friends. Everybody's teammates, yelling at the same time.
I like, need this. I need this.
Spyro X. What were the X and the Y things? The X.
I don't remember.
Anyway, I need a thing that looks kind of like an oil squirter gun with a wire on the end, you know.
I need a star tool.
Yeah. And so you're kind of yelling, but you can't like hand cards across the table. It has to be handed to someone to your left or to your right.
Yeah.
So people have to hand cards
around the table.
But nobody's ever paying attention at the same time, so it's really hard to coordinate some of that stuff. Once you place the tools on a problem, that problem goes away.
Yeah. In addition to the mechanical problems that you're fixing, there are anomalies which affect the way that you can play. So it may be you're not allowed to say anything So suddenly,
until somebody fixes a tool or something.
Suddenly,
like that.
You're
some
you're
of the really
like
restrictive ones. There's like a condition that has to be.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. There's the you have to put down all of your cards and have someone else pick them up for you.
Right. My favorite one was the you have to put this down and put your finger on it, and you can't take your finger off of this until everybody else puts their finger on it, and you all yell 1, 2, 3, pull together.
The hardest one that I found was you're not allowed to use your thumbs for the rest of the round. And so you're trying to pass cards and set cards down and pick cards up with like just your fingers and no thumbs.
That's fine.
And these cards are super,
yeah, they're really slippery.
Super slippery.
Really slippery.
Like slippery plastic. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. It was difficult.
So shuffled in with these problems, there are 6 different cards that basically say like, all navigation systems are go, or all engine systems are go, or whatever. And if you put those 6 together, it's like a mosaic of a rocket ship.
It makes a little picture of a rocket. Yeah. It's adorable.
And so the whole point of the game is to get the rocket ship fixed before the 5-minute timer runs out.
Yes.
And so the rule book has like easy, medium, hard, very hard. And it's just a different number of problems and anomalies kind of mixed into the deck. But that game's a riot. It's a really great like icebreaker. It's just fun to get people talking and yelling and screaming and laughing.
I mean, when we were playing it, we were only playing it with, I think, 4 people,
uh-huh.
and it was kind of crazy, but you can play it with up to 8.
Yeah, it scales really, really well. There is an app version of the game, too.
Yes.
So, you know, if...
And on that one, like, everybody has their own device, I think.
Yeah, everybody's... Yeah, yeah, and they all connect with Bluetooth or near field or something like that, so...
I would love to try this out with a bigger group. I think it would be a hilarious party game.
Yes, that is absolutely something that is on the docket for
definitely
us.
On the to-do list.
I don't think this is great for kids until they're good readers.
Yeah, it's frenetic.
Oh,
it requires reading.
Thrustle.
Yes,
that's what it was.
Thrustle, not throttle.
And why thrustle?
Honestly, I probably wouldn't recommend this for anyone below teenagers because just the combination of skills you need to have, and it's going to be frustrating.
It's more the quick
transition
stuff
than
the reading, I think. Although you could house rule this too.
It's true.
Yeah, you could just play it until you get the ship working.
Yep. Forget about the timer.
Yeah. Absolutely. That could actually be kind of fun with kids. It would be way more laid back that way.
Yes.
A lot less desperate.
We hope.
One can only hope. So.
All right. We have a couple more games we played. I think the same night that we played Space Team, you also played Organ Attack.
Yeah. So Organ Attack is a cute little game. It was made by one of these guys who does webcomics.
The Awkward Yeti.
The Awkward Yeti. Okay. It's a really fun game where each player plays a certain number of organs in front of them, and everybody has these attack cards, and basically you're trying to kill each other's organs. And I don't know necessarily that you're going to learn much about the human anatomy with a game like this, but you'll certainly learn some fancy medical words.
And you'll learn at least what body part they apply to.
Sure.
I mean, sure.
Sure. It's fun. It's just a fun little game.
Yeah.
It's got a cool box. It looks like a book. Like a medical manual?
Like a medical textbook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that game a lot, actually. I really enjoyed playing it.
I came in when you guys were partway through playing it, and it looked like a lot of fun. I mean, it's basically a last man standing kind of game,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So you're trying to eliminate other players' organs.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of take that to the game. Stuff
playing
like that.
Different kinds of diseases on them.
Yep, there is an expansion to the game as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it came in the box or if it's an expansion that you have to buy separately, but I know we didn't play with the expansion. But
sure.
Yeah, it's a fun little game with a little bit of take that and some cute animation or, I guess, cartoons on them.
Yeah.
It was fun.
We played 10 Days in the USA.
Yeah, this is a cute game. It reminded me a little bit of Campaign Trail.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So 10 Days in the USA has actually been around for quite a while. It's... one in a whole series of geography-based games, 10 days in whatever. But I can specifically speak to 10 days in the USA. You are trying to plan a cross-country trip. You have 10 days. And you're filling up those 10 days with different states. Adjacent states, you can just walk from state to state. If a state is separated by only one state from the state you're trying to get to, you can use a card to get between two states. If it's any further than that, you have to fly. Flying can be done between states of the same color with an airplane card that is also the same color. So the idea here is just you're, you know, kind of exchanging cards back and forth from the draw pile and the discard pile and your two trays in front of you with your 10 days until you can get a trip that follows all the rules.
Yep.
Fairly simple, but because of that, it's a kind of low stress, high reward game, and it's really, really good for learning geography.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually kind of enjoyed it a little bit more. You know, we've talked a lot about how the kind of education I like in games is the kind of education where it's sort of an aside.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely felt a little stronger in this. I was concerned.
It's a key mechanic of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I was concerned that it would feel like I was playing a game that was teaching me something. And it doesn't really feel that way. It definitely has a little bit more of that education feel to it, but it's not
overbearing.
Yeah, beating you over the head. So that was good.
Yeah. I have heard that older versions of this have better components. We have the most recent version, which it's cheap plastic trays. It's simple, but really brightly colored cards. It was fine.
Yeah. I mean, we got the game in a trade, so I don't really know how much it costs, but I can't imagine this is particularly expensive.
But aficionados will say find the older copy with the wooden trays and, you know, high quality cards and stuff. But it's a kid's game.
You can't see, but I'm rolling my eyes.
Yeah. It's a kid's game.
Right.
We enjoyed it regardless of components. Yeah.
So that was 10 Days in the USA. Who publishes that?
So it's by Out of the Box Publishing, at least nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of house rule, one of the things we realized we could do with 10 Days in the USA is use just one tray and make it a even shorter game of 5 Days in the USA.
Oh, cool. That's not actually in the book. That's a house rule?
It's a house rule.
Oh, cool. The kids presented that to me as you can just do a short game if you want to.
Yeah. Well, we first thought of it because there were four complete sets of the 1 through 10, but we had an extra 1 through 5 in the box. And we're like, well, then I guess we could do a 5-player game of 5 Days in the USA.
Okay.
Why not?
Sure. Sure, that makes sense. Awesome. Oh, there was one more game.
Was there?
Oh, yes. So we help out with there's a church group that meets on Wednesdays that we help out with, and I had to run games for all the groups,
all the different age groups.
And for the kids, it's easy. You just make them run around and do relay races and stuff like that. It's really not that much of a problem. But for the teenagers,
the like 7th and 8th graders,
I think they're older than that, junior high, I guess. That's 7th and 8th grade.
Yeah,
you usually have to do something a little bit more cerebrally challenging.
You have to get their attention. If you don't do something more cerebrally challenging, then they're going to start doing things that are dangerous.
So yeah, so I brought our copy of Funky Chicken.
How did that go over?
Were
they flapping their arms like maniacs and shouting directions at each other?
No, because they are of the age where those things are awkward.
Ah. So if you were with a little bit older group of teenagers, they would probably lose their inhibitions and do it.
Possibly.
But that like 12, 13, 14 age range, it's just too awkward.
Yeah, I think so. So we had one of the other leaders actually had to get in and start doing some funky chicken flaps.
All right. Nice.
And we did make it through a game. But it was thoroughly entertaining, I will tell you. unfortunately, it wasn't a slam dunk, so to speak.
All right, fair enough. So, well, you heard it here. Not the best game for that awkward preteen range.
Yeah, probably not. But right. I mean, unless you have particularly awesome kids.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's weird. They have a game they call Pick, which is basically giant floor bananagrams, and they like that.
All right.
So I was hoping that maybe just something a little bit ridiculous would appeal, and sadly it did not. However, that game is still awesome.
I love playing Funky Chicken.
So
it helps that it's short.
It is, yeah. And I will give a shout out to the Engage Family Gaming Podcast. They did a Facebook Live video where they mashed up Happy Salmon and Funky Chicken.
Oh, yeah?
In one giant deck.
Nice.
And that was pretty funny. So
there was all kinds of like high-fiving and fist-bumping along with the dancing.
And the whoop, whoop, the Happy Salmon
nice.
Thing and all that stuff, yeah. It was pretty funny.
Cool.
So
you should check that out.
Check that out at...
I will put a link in the show notes.
All right, awesome. So that's basically everything that we have been playing. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, as we alluded to, we're going to talk about house rules.
House rules.
Just house rules. This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by the Wild East Game Company. You can go to wildeastgames.com/order to find all of the games that the Wild East Game Company has created. Whether you're looking for privateering rodents, some upset totems, or some electrified dice, the Wild East Game Company has the game for you. Check them out online at wildeastgames.com. And we are back. So we are going to talk this week about house rules.
Does your house rule?
Our house rules.
Our house rules.
So you, my darling wife, posted a question on our Facebook page.
Yes. So I asked, what do you think of house rules and variations? Also, would you buy a game if you knew you would never play it according to the official rules? With big thanks to Eric Jordheim, who inspired asking this question of our listeners.
Cool. So we got lots of back talk. We won't take it from our kids,
but we love it from you.
So why don't you share some of what some people said in response to the question?
Overwhelmingly, people said that, yes, they use house rules at least some of the time.
Okay.
Everything from Ryan Gutowski from One Board Family said they have a special house rule for Formula D that keeps the playtime down.
Right, which is important because they play it like over their lunch break at work. Yeah. So that's helpful.
Rick White, also from One Board Family, who does the kind of stuff we do, which is if you're playing with new gamers or with kids, just leaving out some of the more complicated rules.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Another one that I really loved from James Correa, he says he does house rules all the time with his kids, and told me that he makes Chicken Cha-Cha, which we've played a lot, into a cooperative game. I love this idea.
So how does that work?
Everyone plays until they can get the whole circle uncovered.
Okay, so
it's
no,
a little shorter.
There's no grabbing of tail feathers.
I mean, maybe there is, but it's no longer a focus of the game.
Okay, sure. That is a cool idea. I like that one a lot. And that actually kind of is similar to what we were talking about, where we kind of throw the timer out with Space Team and we just sort of work to fix the ship.
Yeah. I found it interesting that he said he's been doing that for years because he just wanted to be able to start playing with his kids. But even now, several years on, they prefer to play it cooperatively than to play it competitively.
Sure. Well, me too, because Asher would always beat us anyway, so we should just play co-op.
It's so true.
If you can't beat him, join him.
Couple other minor ones here. Joshua Cade said that he's from the Catholic Board Gamer podcast. In Love Letter, if you're forced to play the princess, you're not out. Only if you accidentally play the princess. I can see where in Love Letter, I mean, that's one of those things where it would make a huge difference to the enjoyability of the game.
Right. Absolutely. Sure.
I love this one. Thomas Grogan said, my favorite house rule is, I bought the game, I win the game.
Yeah, I wish that were the case. I'd be doing a lot better. My stats would be a lot better, but sadly, no. I like what Jeremy Skirdler said. He said that most of the time when they use house rules, it's to help the younger kids play the game. And we've talked about rule shifting in the past on our show, mm-hmm. where we maybe will make points for kids more valuable and less valuable for adults, just to kind of try to balance that game out. So those are house rules, but it's all about trying to level the playing field for all the players. And what was it? Camp from Education Outdoors has that kind of a mechanic in it. It's not a house rule because it's baked
in. It's
baked in.
Yeah.
But there's four different levels that are that couple every mechanic in the game to really level that playing field.
Yep.
So that's, yeah, I mean, that's a huge thing that that is really, really great about the ability to use house rules, is you can kind of judge those things and figure those things out. In fact, one of our writers, his wife uses the game Letter Tycoon with her kid because they homeschool.
Yep.
And the tough thing about almost any word game is that it requires domain knowledge. And so she figured out, like, there's the regular adult scoring, and then she has, like, a secondary scoring weights for the kids.
Yeah.
Just to kind of balance that out. And it's another example of a great way to use house rules to make a game that is a great game, and it's mechanically sound, yep, and it's a lot of fun to play. But when you start introducing different age levels to it, it becomes a lot more difficult to play
it. So to make it feel a little bit more equitable between adults and kids.
Yep.
So we talk about rule shifting all the time. Something I think we've brought up in the past is another game, Match Madness, has difficulty levels built in. But the idea there is that something with a higher difficulty level is worth more points. We've definitely played it as a family where the adults can only pick the high difficulty ones, and they're not worth more points.
Right.
Yeah. And depending on the kids we're playing with, either, like, you know, here, kid, you just go with the easy ones. Or with our oldest, we will tell her, like, hey, pick whichever ones you want. If you pick the hard ones, we'll give you the, you know, the hard points, but we're only going to count them as, like, a medium amount.
Right. Yep. Yeah, and the nice thing about that is that I think that there is a motivation for children or lesser skilled gamers to want to play on the same playing field.
Yes.
And so there's an appreciation for house rules in the sense that, okay, great, it makes the game fun, but our kids aren't dumb.
Yeah. Like,
they know that accommodations are being made.
Yeah.
And being able to play the game, we get a lot of questions from gamers who say, like, I have an 18-month-old or a 2-year-old or a 4-year-old. How do I get them to play games?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first thing that we say is put them on your lap and give them the 6th players, you know, little tokens and stuff to play with to feel like they're part of what's going on. But the next thing to do is to figure out games that you can rule shift or you can house rule to make it a game where maybe what you end up with isn't really a shell of what the game is intended to be, but as you add the complexity later on or remove those special rules, the extra constraints, then they start to kind of evolve into what the natural game is. And what I would say, here's a perfect example of this. If you look at the game Catan Jr.,
right?
Fundamental mechanics of the game Catan Jr. are mostly the same as the game of Catan.
Mostly,
But they have, like, broad brush, whitewashed the game, and removed a lot of the complexity.
Several different pieces that would be difficult for a kid. Yeah.
Right. And so if you have at home a copy of Catan and a copy of Catan Jr. and you compare those rule sets, what you'll see is this idea of rule shifting to greatly simplify the mechanics. See, a game like Stone Age is different because Stone Age, the original game, is like a worker placement game.
Yeah.
My first Stone Age is actually a completely different kind of game that's thematically the same, and there's some similar elements, but it's not quite like
really
that.
The same
Catan Jr. is a game where you can really see that rule shifting idea come into play.
Sure. It's funny. I'm thinking back to when I was a kid, there was a word game that I would love to play with my parents. I don't remember the name of it because it lived at my grandparents' house. But it was a little bit Scrabble-esque, except everybody had their own individual board they were playing on, basically. And my parents figured out pretty quickly that although I had a decent vocabulary, I was not going to come up with the, you know, 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 letter words that they could. So it became since everybody had their own individual board, at the end of the game, we would just count the number of words that everybody had made.
Okay.
So it no longer penalized me for making, you know, 3 and 4 letter words if I could make a lot of them.
Right.
So you know, just to throw a few more ideas out there about people have been doing this for years.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody does house rules, I think, at some point.
Well, I mean, if you've ever played Monopoly, you've done house rules.
Almost certainly.
Right? I mean,
almost certainly.
Monopoly is kind of the classic house rules game. Where nobody plays it right. So
most people don't do auctions. Right. Most people put money on free parking. All those things.
All that kind of stuff. I mean, I think that there are some people who just can't bring themselves to house rule a game. And I can appreciate the love of the sanctity of the rule book.
Well, I can understand that because it's like, well, this is the way the game is intended to be played.
Right. And I kind of I can identify with that because I am very much on the side of the storyteller when a book ends or a movie ends or a game ends in a way that people don't like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, it's their story. Yeah, and they can tell it however they want to. And that's kind of the same mentality that goes into this idea of like, how could you change the rules? They're the rules, you guys.
Yeah.
Right.
I think I've gotten a lot more fluid about this with the years as we've had children and been playing with children, because I definitely remember early on being like, no, you can't play that way. And trying to tell a 3-year-old like, that's not how the game is played, and realizing I need to just step back and be like, you know what? If they just want to play with it as a toy, that's okay.
Well, ultimately board games are toys.
Board games are toys.
Right.
Yes.
I mean that somebody just dropped their lunch hearing me say that. Please stay in your lane. No. But they are. I mean, they're complicated toys.
They are.
And you know that you can play with toys however you want to play with toys, man.
There's no wrong way as long as no one is getting hurt.
And as long as it's not Reese's, because there is a wrong way to eat Reese's.
There's no wrong way.
There is a wrong way to eat Reese's.
Yes. To leave them on the counter.
Exactly right.
That is the wrong way.
That is the wrong way. You know what I'd be interested in hearing about from our listeners? Whether or not people use house rules to fix broken games.
I think most people do, because once you've invested in a game, you hate to find out that it just isn't working for you anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I will confess that that is something that I struggle with, is really being original about how I alter the rules of a game to make it more appetizing, right? So,
yeah.
For example, stuff like what we did with Match Madness is very easy for me because it still follows the fundamental tenets of how you do everything in the game. It's just a slight adjustment to make things easier for kids.
That's the easiest kind of house rule.
Yeah.
My favorite house rule is to play Carcassonne with 3 tiles in hand instead of the way the game was written, which is you pick up a tile, and the next turn, you lay that tile down.
You want to know my favorite Carcassonne house rule?
Not playing it?
Don't play it.
Yeah.
Play Isle of Skye instead.
Isle of Skye is fantastic.
It's so good.
But if you are playing Carcassonne.
Yeah.
No, but I think it's hard to come up with, if you're house ruling a game so that it plays fundamentally differently, I'm not sure it's really house rules anymore. I think you might just be taking game components and making a new game out of them.
Okay, which is fine.
Which is also a fine thing to do.
Right.
I was really surprised to find out how universal it is to house rule. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we mentioned, there are some people out there who are like, nope, I can't do it. If the game's not good as written, we're just not going to play the game.
It's like writing in a book. Like, can't do it.
Can't
nope.
do it.
Nope.
But I thought that attitude would be a lot more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really surprised to see just how frequently it comes up. You know what comes up a lot playing games with kids? A lot of times, once I'm familiar with a game, I will house rule it to make it end sooner. Because, like, not like, oh, it has to end, but more that our kids will tend to lose interest.
So you can, if you see the interest level waning, you'll kind of chop off some of the intermediary bits.
Or, you know, or just say, hey, this is normally a half hour game, but I've really only got about 15 minutes. You know, can we play to 5 instead of playing to 10?
Sure.
Whatever.
Sure.
I've really enjoyed that. Not every game works that way, obviously. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these lighter kid games, it's pretty simple to just chop some of the end off and still have a good game.
Yeah, I mean, I think of games like like Sherlock Holmes, where mm-hmm. you kind of have a road that it's
that you got to follow,
you build out, right? Or we talked about Space Team, right? Where you can have less
change the difficulty,
less stuff. You could even with a game like Chicken Cha Cha Cha, you'd have to do it, as you're doing setup. But if you remove the matching components of the middle and the ring on the outside,
you could make it a smaller game.
If you were playing it co-op and, you know, you had a smaller amount of time, you could just remove half the components of the game and then just play a smaller version of the game. And so those things, are really easy ways to adjust it while keeping the core mechanics of what's happening the same, right? It's the same game, but you've maybe unbalanced it by doing so. But
right, well, that's why you got to be careful.
Big of a deal, right? Right. I mean, what I really would love for this episode to be is like a catalyst for a conversation about all sorts of games and the best house rules that different families use on their games to make them either take games that are really more advanced than what their kids are ready for and help their kids be able to play them, mm-hmm. or ways that they've taken games and made them playable by multiple age ranges. Like, that's really what I want to get out of this episode. You know, we've talked a little bit about the kind of stuff that we've done, but we're the same five people, right? And so we have the similar experiences. And so what I would say is, like, this is an opportunity for all of our listeners to go to our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA or to our Facebook community, which is at thefamilygamers.com/community, and talk about the kinds of things that they house rule and the ways that they take games that they know and they love and they figure out how to make them playable by different kinds of people. And maybe those different kinds of people are grandma who just can't handle the complex parts of a game or something like that, too.
Or it could even just be temporarily house ruling a game to make it faster and easier to teach.
Right.
I saw an example the other day where somebody was asking on a Facebook group that we're a part of to say, how do you teach the auction component of Downforce? It's so different than the rest of the game. And more than one person replied and said, you know what? First time I'm playing it with new people, I don't. I either hand out cars and powers randomly.
Right.
Or, you know, just tell everybody you are bidding three and we're done. And then once somebody has played through the game, kind of sees how the math works out.
Sure.
Then they can understand the next time, all right, I want, you know, as few cars as possible, but I want, you know, I know what powers I want. I know what I want to bid.
Right,
things like that.
Yeah, so using house rules to layer the complexity of the game on it, and not necessarily, like we said earlier, as a way to simplify a game for a kid, but just as sort of the ramp-up process. You know what that makes me think of is how Magic Maze works.
I was going to say, we really admire when games build this into the rules and say, your first time, do this so that you don't have to wade through all these other rules.
Right.
You know, your second or third time, add in these other rules.
Right. That is exactly what Magic Maze does.
Magic Maze does it. Legacy games do it to some extent,
mm-hmm.
Although that's, you know, it's baked into the
There's a lot of games that'll say things like, you know, here's your recommended starting deck if you're a first-time player. Like, those are some examples of, they're not house rules, but it's the same idea.
It's a simpler way to introduce the game without significantly changing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like it. So that's what house rules are for.
In our opinion, anyway.
What
house rules are not for is what I saw the kids I babysit doing with Candyland this morning.
Okay, tell me more. I don't know if I want to know, but tell me anyway.
I was surprised to see they pulled out Candyland, because this group includes...
I don't suppose you sent Candyland home with them.
No, I should have. This group includes a 10-year-old and an 11-year-old, but they pulled out Candyland, they're starting to play it, and then it's like... Oh, well, you know, it's not your turn because you drew a green last time. Or, you know, I got this card, and so I'm moving forward three instead of two. And I'm like, what are you guys doing?
So was it like the Candyland version of Calvin Ball?
It kind of was, yeah. With, you know, with the one kid being like, wait a minute, that's not how the game is played.
That's funny.
Because there's always one of those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that is not what house rules are for. House rules need to be agreed upon before you start playing.
Mom and dad have a little bit of leniency, I think, in that regard. Like you said before, if you're going through a game and you realize
if you want to cut it short,
you need to cut it short or something like that. But
even
generally
then,
speaking, I would agree with you. If you want to change the rules, everybody needs to agree.
Yes.
That should go without saying, but I guess we're saying it out loud.
Like you were saying with shortening a game, even though we're making that decision partway through, that's usually we're going to get everyone's agreement and say, you know what? This game's running really long. We're running out of time. You know, how about we play to 6 instead of 10 or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if that doesn't work for everybody, you keep negotiating and figure something out.
All right. Well, I think that is basically going to do it for us this week. We were a little all over the place, but that's okay. I think we covered some really good stuff about house rules. And we got so much feedback and back talk from our community on this one. It was awesome. And I'm sure that there are people that are listening to this now that didn't realize that we had posted the question in our Facebook group. And absolutely, if you'd like, I mean, if you want to get your name mentioned on the show, just send us an email or comment on some of our Facebook posts. And we love to get that feedback.
Or comment on the show notes at thefamilygamers.com.
Right. So every single show has show notes at thefamilygamers.com. You can head over there. Usually if we talk about a game, we have a link to it right in the post that goes directly to Amazon if something sounds interesting, want to check it out. Mm-hmm. So go to thefamilygamers.com, check out the show notes there. If you want to check out the community, we mentioned it earlier, you can go to thefamilygamers.com/community. That goes directly to our Facebook community.
Of course, you can also find us on Twitter or on Instagram at FamilyGamersAA.
Right. And Facebook, too. Right?
Yes.
Yep. I mentioned email. You can always email me, Andrew, at thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra at thefamilygamers.com.
We want to thank our sponsor this year, Wild East Games. They have got their new game, Slapdown.
The Unfriend Maker.
Out right now. You can go to wildeastgames.com to order your copy of Slapdown.
Or find them on social media at Wild East Games.
Let's see. We are proud members of the Dice Tower Network. Head over to dicetower.com and check out everything that they're doing. They've got a bajillion things going on. They've got all their International Tabletop Day post coverage.
All kinds of videos.
Yep.
Several sister podcasts of the Family Gamers.
Yep. So lots of good stuff over there.
Yeah. Last but not least, please don't forget to subscribe to this lovely podcast and tell your friends.
Please tell your friends about the show. We got another email from a group that put us up on their RSS feed because they heard about the show. So that feedback and those comments and those reviews and things like that are very helpful towards growing the show. And let's be honest, we've got 6 episodes until 100. We're going to be giving some stuff away.
Yep.
And the more listeners we have,
the more stuff we can give away.
The more stuff we give away. So definitely tell everybody you know about the show. We would highly appreciate it. Well, as always, we've had a lot of fun doing the show this week, but we are done. And so, until next week,
play games with your kids.